Chapter 12. Woven in the Pattern. Egwene hurried after Nynaeve toward the knot of Aes Sedai around the Ammerlin Seat's horse-borne palanquin. Her desire to know what had caused the turmoil in Faldara kept outweighing even her worry over Rand. He was beyond her reach, for the moment. Bella, her shaggy mare, was with the Aes Sedai's horses, and Nynaeve's mount, too. The warders, hands on sword hilts and eyes searching everywhere, made a steel circle around the Aes Sedai and the palanquin. They were an island of relative calm in the courtyard, where Shinaran soldiers still ran amid the keep's horrified inhabitants. Egwene pushed in beside Nynaeve. The two of them all but ignored after a single sharp glance from the warders. All knew they would be leaving with the Ammerlin, and caught enough in the crowd's murmurs to learn of an arrow that had flashed seemingly from nowhere, and a bowman yet uncaught. Egwene stopped, wide-eyed, too shocked even to think that she was surrounded by Aes Sedai. An attempt on the life of the Ammerlin Seat. It went beyond thinking of. The Ammerlin sat in her palanquin with the curtains drawn back, the blood-stained rip in her sleeve drawing all eyes, and faced down Lord Agelmar. "You will find the bowman, or you will not, my son. Either way, my business in Tar Valon is as urgent as that of Ingtar on his quest. I leave now." "But, mother," Agelmar protested, "this attempt on your life changes everything. We still do not know who sent the man or why. An hour more and I will have the bowman and the answers for you." The Ammerlin barked a laugh with no amusement in it. "You'll need slyer bait or finer nets to catch this fish, my son. By the time you have the man, it will be too late in the day for leaving. There are too many who would cheer to see me dead for me to worry over much about this one. You may send me news of what you find, if you find anything at all." Her eyes traveled around the towers overlooking the courtyard, and the ramparts and archers' balconies, still jammed with people, though silent now. The arrow had to have come from one of those places. "I think this bowman has already fled from Faldara." "But, mother—" The woman in the palanquin cut him off with a sharp gesture of finality. Not even the Lord of Faldara could press the Ammerlin Seat too far. Her eyes came to rest on Egwene and Nynaeve, piercing eyes that seemed to Egwene to be seeing everything about herself that she wanted to keep secret. Egwene took a step back, then caught herself and dropped a curtsy, wondering if that were proper. No one had ever explained to her the protocol of meeting the Ammerlin Seat. Nynaeve kept her back straight and returned the Ammerlin's stare, but she fumbled for Egwene's hand and gripped as hard as Egwene did. "So these are your two, Moiraine," the Ammerlin said. Moiraine gave the barest nod, and the other Aes Sedai turned to stare at the two women from Emmon's Field. Egwene swallowed. They all looked as if they knew things, things other people did not, and it was no help at all to know that they truly did. "Yes, I sense a fine spark in each of them. But what will kindle from it? That's the question, isn't it?" Egwene's mouth felt dry as dust. She had seen Master Podwin, the carpenter back home, look at his tools much the same way as the Ammerlin was looking at the two of them. "This one for this purpose, that one for that." The Ammerlin said abruptly, "It is time we were gone. To horse. Lord Agelmar and I can say what needs to be said without you all gawking like novices on a free day. To horse!" At her command, the warders scattered to their mounts, still wary, and the Aes Sedai, all but Lyanna, glided away from the palanquin to their own horses. As Egwene and Nynaeve turned to obey, a servant appeared at Lord Agelmar's shoulder with a silver chalice. Agelmar took it with a dissatisfied twist to his mouth. "With this cup from my hand, mother, take my wish that you fare well on this day and every—" Whatever else they said was lost to Egwene as she scrambled on to Bella. By the time she had given the shaggy mare a pat and arranged her skirts, the palanquin was already moving toward the open gates, its horses stepping without rein or lead. Lyanna rode beside the palanquin, her staff propped at her stirrup. Egwene and Nynaeve brought their horses along behind with the rest of the Aes Sedai. Roars and cheers from the crowds lining the town streets greeted the procession, all but drowning the thunder of the drummers and the blare of the trumpeters. Warders led the column with the banner bearing the white flame waving in ripples, and rode guard around the Aes Sedai, keeping the mass of people back. Archers and pikemen, the flame blazoned on their chests, followed behind in precise ranks. The trumpets fell silent as the column wound its way out of the town and turned southward, yet the sounds of cheering from within the town followed still. Egwene glanced back often, until trees and hills hid Faldara's walls and towers. Nynaeve, riding alongside, shook her head. "Rand will be all right. He has Lord Ingtar and 20 lances with him. In any case, there is nothing you can do about it. Nothing either of us can do." She glanced toward Moiraine. The Aes Sedai's trim white mare and Lan's tall black stallion made an odd pair, off to one side by themselves. "Not yet." The column angled westward as it traveled, and it did not cover the ground quickly. Even footmen in half-armor could not move fast through the Shinaran hills, not and maintain the pace for long. Still, they pushed as hard as they could. Camps came late each night, the Amyrlin allowing no stop until barely enough light remained to pitch the tents, flattened white domes just tall enough to stand in. Each pair of Aes Sedai from the same Aja had one, while the Amyrlin and the Keeper had tents to themselves. Moiraine shared the tent of her two sisters of the Blue. The soldiers slept on the ground in their own encampment, and the warders wrapped themselves in their cloaks near the tents of the Aes Sedai to whom they were bonded. The tent shared by the Red Sisters looked oddly lonely without any warders, while that of the Green seemed almost festive, the two Aes Sedai often sitting outside long past dark to talk with the four warders they had brought between them. Lan came once to the tent Egwene shared with Nynaeve, taking the wisdom into the night a little distance away. Egwene peered around the tent flap to watch. She could not hear what they said, except that Nynaeve eventually erupted in anger and came stalking back to wrap herself in her blankets, and refused to talk at all. Egwene thought her cheeks were wet, though she hid her face with a corner of her blanket. Lan stood watching the tent from the darkness for a long time before he went away. After that, he did not come again. Moiraine did not come near them, giving them only a nod in passing. She seemed to spend her waking hours speaking with the other Aes Sedai, all but the Red Sisters, drawing them aside one by one as they rode. The Amyrlin allowed few stops for rest, and those short.
"Maybe she doesn't have time for us anymore," Egwene observed sadly.
Moiraine was the one Aes Sedai she knew. Perhaps, though she did not like to admit it, the only one she was sure she could trust.
"She found us, and we are on our way to Tar Valon. I suppose she has other things to concern her now."
Nynaeve snorted softly. "I'll believe she is done with us when she's dead, or we are. She is sly, that one." Other Aes Sedai came to their tent. Egwene almost jumped out of her skin that first night out of Faldara when the tent flap was pushed aside, and a plump, square-faced Aes Sedai, with graying hair and a vaguely distracted look in her dark eyes, ducked into their tent. She glanced at the lantern hanging at the highest point of the tent, and the flame rose a little higher. Egwene thought she felt something, thought she almost saw something about the Aes Sedai when the flame grew brighter. Moiraine had told her that one day, when she had more training, she would be able to see when another woman channeled, and to tell a woman who could channel even if she did nothing.
"I am Verin Mathwin," the woman said with a smile, "and you are Egwene Alvear and Nynaeve Almira, from the Two Rivers, which was once Manatheron. Strong blood, that. It sings."
Egwene exchanged glances with Nynaeve as they got to their feet.
"Is this a summons to the Amyrlin seat?" Egwene asked.
Verin laughed. The Aes Sedai had a smudge of ink on her nose.
"Oh my, no. The Amyrlin has more important things to deal with than two young women who are not even novices yet. Although, you never can tell. You both have considerable potential, especially you, Nynaeve. One day..."
She paused, rubbing a finger thoughtfully right atop the ink smudge.
But this is not one day. I am here to give you a lesson, Egwene. You have been poking in ahead of yourself, I fear. Nervously, Egwene looked at Nynaeve. What have I done? Nothing that I'm aware of. Oh, nothing wrong, not exactly. Somewhat dangerous, perhaps, but not exactly wrong. Varin lowered herself to the canvas floor, folding her legs under her. Sit, both of you, sit. I don't mean to crane my neck. She shifted around until she had a comfortable position. Sit. Egwene settled cross-legged across from the Aes Sedai and did her best not to look at Nynaeve. No need to look guilty until I know if I am, and maybe not then. What is it I've done that's dangerous but not exactly wrong? Why, you've been channeling the power, child. Egwene could only gape. Nynaeve burst out, That is ridiculous! Why are we going to Tar Valon if not for that? Moiraine Sedai has been giving me lessons, Egwene managed. Varin held up her hands for quiet, and they fell silent. She might seem vague, but she was Aes Sedai after all. Child, do you think Aes Sedai immediately teach every girl who says she wants to be one of us how to channel? Well, I suppose you are not exactly every girl, but just the same. She shook her head gravely. Then why did she? Nynaeve demanded. There had been no lessons for her, and Egwene was still not sure if it rankled Nynaeve or not. Because Egwene had already channeled, Varin said patiently.
So have I. Nynaeve did not sound happy about it.
Your circumstances are different, child. That you are still alive shows you weathered the various crises and did it on your own. I think you know how lucky you are. Of every four women forced to do what you did, only one survives. Of course, Wilder's... Varin grimaced. Forgive me, but I am afraid that is what we in the White Tower often call women who, without any training, have managed some rough control, random and barely enough to be called control, usually like you, but still control of a sort. Wilders have difficulties, it is true. Almost always they have built up walls to keep themselves from knowing what it was they were doing, and those walls interfere with conscious control. The longer those walls have to build, the harder it is to tear them down. But if they can be demolished, well, some of the most adept sisters ever have been Wilders. Nynaeve shifted irritably and looked at the entrance as if thinking of leaving. I don't see what any of that has to do with me, Egwene said. Varin blinked at her, almost as if wondering where she had come from. With you? Why, nothing. Your problem is quite different. Most girls who want to become Aes Sedai, even most girls with the seed inside them like you, are afraid of it, too. Even after they reach the tower, even after they've learned what to do and how, for months they need to be led step by step by a sister or by one of the accepted. But not you. From what Moiraine tells me, you leaped into it as soon as you knew you could, fumbling your way through the dark with never a thought of whether there was a bottomless pit under your next step. Oh, there have been others like you. You are not unique. Moiraine was one herself. Once she knew what you had done, there was nothing for it but for her to begin teaching you. Did Moiraine never explain any of this to you?
Never.
Egwene wished her voice was not so breathless.
She had other matters to deal with.
Nynaeve snorted softly. Well, Moiraine has never believed in telling anyone anything they did not need to know. Knowing serves no real purpose, but then neither does not knowing. Myself, I always prefer knowing to not.
Is there one? A pit, I mean?
Obviously not so far, Varin said, tilting her head. But the next step? She shrugged. You see, child, the more you try to touch the true source, the more you try to channel the one power, the easier it becomes to actually do it. Yes, in the beginning, you stretch out to the source, and more often than not, it is like grasping at air. Or you actually touch Saidar, but even when you feel the one power flowing through you, you find you can do nothing with it. Or you do something, and it isn't what you intended at all. That is the danger.
Usually, with guidance and training, and the girl's own fear slowing her down, the ability to touch the source and the ability to channel the power come together with the ability to control what she is doing. But you began trying to channel without anyone there to teach you any control at all of what you do. I know you don't think you're very far along, and you are not, but you are like someone who has taught herself to run up hills, sometimes at least, without ever learning how to run down the other side, or to walk. Sooner or later, you're going to fall if you don't learn the rest of it. Now, I'm not talking about anything like what happens when one of those poor men begins channeling. You will not go mad. You won't die, not with sisters to teach and guide you. But what might you do entirely by accident, never meaning to? For an instant, the vagueness had dropped from Varen's eyes. For an instant, it seemed, the Aes Sedai's gaze had flicked from Egwene to Nynaeve as sharply as the Ammerlin's had. Your innate abilities are strong, child, and they will grow stronger. You must learn to control them before you harm yourself, or someone else, or a great many people. That is what Moiraine was trying to teach you. That is what I will try to help you with tonight, and what a sister will help you with every night until we put you into Shiriam's most capable hands. She is mistress of novices. Egwene thought, can she know about Rand? It isn't possible. She'd never have let him leave Faldara if she even suspected. But she was sure she had not imagined what she saw. Thank you, Varen Sedai. I will try. Nynaeve rose smoothly to her feet. I will go sit by the fire and leave you two alone. You should stay, Varen said. You could profit by it. From what Moiraine has told me, it should take only a little training for you to be raised to the accepted. Nynaeve hesitated only a moment before shaking her head firmly. I thank you for the offer, but I can wait until we reach Tarvalen. Egwene, if you need me, I will be— By any gauge, Varen cut in. You are a woman grown, Nynaeve. Usually the younger a novice, the better she does. Not with the training necessarily, but because a novice is expected to do as she is told, when she is told, and without question. It is really only of use once the actual training has reached a certain point. A hesitation in the wrong place, then, or a doubt of what you have been told to do, can have tragic consequences. But it is better to follow the discipline all the time. The accepted, on the other hand, are expected to question things, as it is felt they know enough to know what questions to ask and when. Which do you think you would prefer? Nynaeve's hands tightened on her skirt, and she looked at the tent flap again, frowning. Finally, she gave a short nod and settled back down on the floor. I suppose I might as well, she said. Good, Varen said. Now, you already know this part, Egwene, but for Nynaeve's sake, I will take you through it step by step. In time, it will become second nature. You will do it all faster than you can think of it, but now it is best to go slowly. Close your eyes, please. It goes better in the beginning if you have no distractions at all. Egwene closed her eyes. There was a pause. Nynaeve, Varen said. Please, close your eyes. It will really go better. Another pause. Thank you, child. Now, you must empty yourself. Empty your thoughts. There is only one thing in your mind. The bud of a flower. Only that. Only the bud. You can see it in every detail. You can smell it. You can feel it. Every vein of every leaf, every curve of every petal. You can feel the sap pulsing. Feel it. Know it. Be it. You and the bud are the same. You are one. You are the bud. Her voice droned on hypnotically, but Egwene no longer really heard. She had done this exercise before with Moiraine. It was slow, but Moiraine had said it would come more quickly with practice. Inside herself, she was a rosebud, red petals curled tightly. Yet suddenly there was something else. Light. Light pressing on the petals. Slowly the petals unfolded, turning toward the light, absorbing the light. The rose and the light were one. Egwene and the light were one. She could feel the merest trickle of it seeping through her. She stretched for more, strained for more. In an instant it was all gone, rose and light.
Moiraine had also said it could not be forced. With a sigh, she opened her eyes. Nynaeve had a grim look on her face. Varen was as calm as ever.
You cannot make it happen, the Aes Sedai was saying. You must let it happen. You must surrender to the power before you can control it.
This is complete foolishness, Nynaeve muttered. I don't feel like a flower. If anything, I feel like a blackthorn bush. I think I will wait by the fire after all.
As you wish, Varen said. Did I mention that novices do chores? They wash dishes, scrub floors, do laundry, serve at table, all sorts of things. I myself think the servants do a better job of it by far, but it is generally felt that such labor builds character.
Oh, you are staying? Good. Well, child, remember that even a blackthorn bush has flowers sometimes, beautiful and white among the thorns. We will try it one at a time. Now, from the beginning, Egwene. Close your eyes.
Several times before Varen left, Egwene felt the flow of the power through her, but it was never very strong, and the most she managed with it was to produce a stir in the air that made the tent flap stir slightly. She was sure a sneeze could have done as much. She had done better with Moiraine, sometimes at least. She wished it was Moiraine doing the teaching. Nynaeve never even felt a glimmer, or so she said. By the end, her eyes were set, and her mouth so tight that Egwene was afraid she was about to begin berating Varen as if the Aes Sedai were a village woman intruding on her privacy. But Varen simply told her to close her eyes once more, this time without Egwene. Egwene was sitting, watching the other two between her yawns. The night had grown late, well past the time she would usually be asleep. Nynaeve wore a face like week-old death, her eyes clamped shut as if she never meant to open them, and her hands white-knuckled fists in her lap. Egwene hoped the wisdom's temper did not break loose, not after she had held it this long.
"Feel the flow through you," Varen was saying. Her voice did not change, but suddenly there was a gleam in her eyes. "Feel the flow, flow of the power, flow like a breeze, a gentle stirring in the air."
Egwene sat up straight. This was how Varen had guided her each time she had actually had the power flowing through her.
A soft breeze, the slightest movement of air, soft.
Abruptly, the stacked blankets burst into flame like fat wood. Nynaeve opened her eyes with a yell. Egwene was not sure if she screamed or not. All Egwene knew was that she was on her feet, trying to kick the burning blankets outside before they set the tent on fire. Before she managed the second kick, the flames vanished, leaving wispy smoke rising from a charred mass and the smell of burned wool.
"Well," Varen said. "Well, I did not expect to have to douse a fire. Don't faint on me, child. It's all right now. I took care of it."
I was angry. Nynaeve spoke through trembling lips and a bloodless face. "I heard you talking about a breeze, telling me what to do, and fire just popped into my head. I didn't mean to burn anything. It was just a small fire in my head," she shuddered.
"I suppose it was a small fire at that."
Varen barked a laugh that was gone with another look at Nynaeve's face.
"Are you all right, child? If you feel ill, I can..."
Nynaeve shook her head, and Varen nodded.
"Rest is what you need, both of you. I've worked you too hard. You must rest. The Amarlin will have us all up and away before first light."
Standing, she towed the charred blankets.
"I will have some more blankets brought to you. I hope this shows both of you how important control is. You must learn to do what you mean to do, and nothing more. Aside from harming someone else, if you draw more of the power than you can safely handle, and you cannot handle much yet, but it will grow. If you draw too much, you can destroy yourself, you can die, or you can burn yourself out, destroy what ability you have." As if she had not told them they were walking a knife edge, she added a cheerful, "Sleep well." With that, she was gone. Egwene put her arms around Nynaeve and hugged her tight.
"It is all right, Nynaeve. There is no need to be frightened. Once you learn to control..."
Nynaeve gave a croaking laugh. I am not frightened. She glanced sideways at the smoking blankets and twitched her eyes away. It takes more than a little fire to frighten me. But she did not look at the blankets again, even when a warder came to take them away and leave new. Varin did not come again, as she said she would not. Indeed, as they journeyed on, south and west, day by day, as fast as the footmen could move, Varin paid the two women from Emmon's Field no more mind than Moiraine did, than any of the Aes Sedai. They were not precisely unfriendly, the Aes Sedai, but rather distant and aloof, as if preoccupied. Their coolness heightened Egwene's unease and brought back all the tales she had heard as a child. Her mother had always told her the tales about Aes Sedai were a lot of fool men's nonsense, but neither her mother nor any other woman in Emmon's Field had ever met an Aes Sedai before Moiraine came there. She herself had spent a good deal of time with Moiraine, and Moiraine was proof to her that not all Aes Sedai were like the tales. Cold manipulators and merciless destroyers, breakers of the world. She knew now that those, at least, the breakers of the world, had been male Aes Sedai, when there were such, in the Age of Legends. But it did not help a great deal. Not all Aes Sedai were like the tales, but how many, and which? The Aes Sedai who came to the tent each night were so mixed that they did not help at all in clearing her thoughts. Alviarin was as cool and businesslike as a merchant come to buy wool and tabak, surprised that Nynaeve was part of the lesson, but accepting, sharp in her criticisms, but always ready to try again. Alanna Mosvani laughed and spent as much time talking about the world and men as she did teaching. Alanna showed too much interest in Rand and Perrin and Matt for Egwene's comfort, though, especially Rand. Worst of all was Leandrin, the only one who wore her shawl. The others had all packed them away before leaving Faldara. Leandrin sat fingering her red fringe and taught little, and reluctantly at that. She questioned Egwene and Nynaeve as if they had been accused of a crime, and her questions were all about the three boys. She kept it up until Nynaeve threw her out. Egwene was not sure why Nynaeve did so, and then she left with a warning. "Watch yourselves, my daughters. You are in your village no longer. Now you dabble your toes where there are things to bite you." Finally, the column reached the village of Meadow on the banks of the Mora, which ran along the border between Shinar and Arafel and so into the river Arinon. Egwene was sure it was the Aes Sedai's questions about Rand that had made her start dreaming of him, that and worrying about him, about whether he and the others had had to follow the Horn of Valir into the Blight. The dreams were always bad, but at first they were just the ordinary sort of nightmare. By the night they reached Meadow, the dreams had changed, though. "Pardon, Aes Sedai," Egwene asked diffidently, "but have you seen Moiraine Sedai?" The slender Aes Sedai waved her away and hurried on down the crowded, torchlit village street, calling for someone to be careful with her horse. The woman was of the yellow Aja, though not wearing her shawl now. Egwene knew no more of her than that, not even her name. Meadow was a small village, though Egwene was shocked to realize that what she now thought of as a small village was as big as Emmon's Field, and it was overwhelmed now with many more outsiders than there were inhabitants. Horses and people filled the narrow streets, jostling to the docks past villagers who knelt whenever an unseeing Aes Sedai sped by. Harsh torchlight lit everything. The two docks jutted out into the River Mora like stone fingers, and each hosted a pair of small, two-masted ships. There, horses were being hoisted on board by booms and cables and canvas cradles under their bellies. More of the ships, high-sided and stout with lanterns topping their masts, crowded the moon-streaked river, already loaded or waiting their turn. Rowboats ferried out archers and pikemen, the raised pikes making the boats look like gigantic pricklebacks swimming on the surface. On the left-hand dock, Egwene found Anaya, watching the loading and chivying those who were not moving fast enough. Though she had never said more than two words to Egwene, Anaya seemed different from the others, more like a woman from home. Egwene could picture her baking in her kitchen. She could not see any of the others so. "Anaya Sedai, have you seen Moiraine Sedai? I need to talk to her." The Aes Sedai looked around with an absent frown. What? Oh, it's you, child. Moiraine is gone, and your friend Nynaeve is already out on the River Queen. I had to bundle her onto a boat myself, shouting that she would not go without you. Light, what a scramble. You should be aboard yourself. Find a boat going out to the River Queen. You two will be traveling with the Armerlin Seat, so mind yourself once you're on board. No scenes or tantrums.
Which ship is Moiraine Sedai's?
Moiraine isn't on a ship, girl. She's gone. 2 days gone, and the Armerlin is in a taking over it.
Anaya grimaced and shook her head, though most of her attention was still on the workers.
First Moiraine vanishes with Lan, then Leandrin right on Moiraine's heels, and then Verin, none of them with so much as a word for anyone. Verin did not even take her warder. Tomas is chewing nails with worry over her. The Aes Sedai glanced at the sky. The waxing moon shone without the hindrance of clouds.
We will have to call the wind again, and the Armerlin will not be pleased with that either. She says she wants us on our way to Tar Valon within an hour, and she will brook no delays.
I would not want to be Moiraine or Leandrin or Verin when she sees them next. They'll wish they were novices again.
Why, child, what's the matter?
Egwene drew a deep breath.
Moiraine gone? She can't be. I have to tell somebody. Somebody who won't laugh at me.
She imagined Anaya back in Emmons Field, listening to her daughter's problems. The woman fit the picture.
Anaya Sedai? Rand is in trouble.
Anaya gave her a considering look. That tall boy from your village? Missing him already, are you? Well, I shouldn't be surprised if he is in trouble. Young men his age usually are. Though it was the other one, Matt, who had the look of trouble. Very well, child. I don't mean to mock you or make light. What kind of trouble and how do you know? He and Lord Ingtar must have the horn and be back in Faldara by now. Or else they've had to follow it into the Blight, and there's nothing to do about that.
I don't think they're in the Blight or back in Faldara. I had a dream.
She said it half defiantly. It sounded silly when she said it, but it had seemed so real. A nightmare for true, but real. First there had been a man with a mask over his face and fire in place of his eyes. Despite the mask, she had thought he was surprised to see her. His look had frightened her till she thought her bones would break from shivering, but suddenly he vanished, and she saw Rand sleeping on the ground wrapped in a cloak. A woman had been standing over him, looking down. Her face was in shadow, but her eyes seemed to shine like the moon, and Egwene had known she was evil. Then there was a flash of light and they were gone, both of them. And behind it all, almost like another thing altogether, was the feel of danger, as if a trap was just beginning to snap shut on an unsuspecting lamb, a trap with many jaws. As though time had slowed, and she could watch the iron jaws creep closer together. The dream had not faded with waking the way dreams did, and the danger felt so strong she still wanted to look over her shoulder, only somehow she knew that it was aimed at Rand, not at her. She wondered if the woman had been Moiraine, and upbraided herself for the thought. Leandrin fit that part better, or perhaps Alana, she had been interested in Rand too. She could not bring herself to tell Anaya. Formally, she said, "Anaya Sedai, I know it sounds foolish, but he is in danger. Great danger. I know it. I could feel it. I still can." Anaya wore a thoughtful look. "Well, now," she said softly, "that's a possibility I'll wager no one has considered. You may be a dreamer." "It is a small chance, child, but we haven't had one of those in, 400 or 500 years. And dreaming is close linked to foretelling. If you really can dream, it may be that you can foretell as well." "That would be a finger in the Red's eye. Of course, it could be just an ordinary nightmare, brought on by a late night and cold food and us traveling so hard since we left Faldara. And you missing your young man, much more likely." "Yes, yes, child, I know. You are worried about him. Did your dream indicate what kind of danger?" Egwene shook her head.
"He just vanished, and I felt danger and evil. I felt it even before he vanished.
She shivered and rubbed her hands together.
I can still feel it.
Well, we will talk about it more on the River Queen. If you are a dreamer, I will see you have the training Moiraine should be here to—
You there!
The Aes Sedai barked suddenly, and Egwene jumped. A tall man who had just sat down on a cask of wine jumped too. Several others quickened their step.
That's for loading a board, not resting on.
We will talk on the boat, child.
No, you fool, you can't carry it by yourself. Do you want to hurt yourself?
Anaya went striding off down the dock, giving the unfortunate villagers a rougher side of her tongue than Egwene would have suspected she had. Egwene peered into the dark toward the south. He was out there, somewhere. Not in Faldara. Not in the Blight. She was sure of it.
Hold on, you wool-headed idiot. If you get yourself killed before I can get you out of this, I will skin you alive.
It did not occur to her to ask how she was going to get him out of anything, going to Tar Valon as she was. Snugging her cloak around her, she set out to find a boat to the River Queen.
Chapter 13. From Stone to Stone. The light of the rising sun woke Rand, and he wondered if he were dreaming. He sat up slowly, staring. Everything had changed, or almost everything. The sun and the sky were as he expected to see, if pallid and all but cloudless. Loyal and Huron still lay on either side of him, wrapped in their cloaks asleep, and their horses still stood hobbled a pace away. But everyone else was gone. Soldiers, horses, his friends, everyone and everything gone. The hollow itself had changed, too. And they were in the middle of it now, no longer on the edge. At Rand's head rose a gray stone cylinder, every bit of 3 spans high and a full pace thick, covered with hundreds, perhaps thousands, of deeply incised diagrams and markings in some language he did not recognize. White stone paved the bottom of the hollow, as level as a floor, polished so smooth it almost glistened. Broad, high steps rose to the rim in concentric rings of different colored stone. And about the rim, the trees stood blackened and twisted, as if a firestorm had roared through them. Everything seemed paler than it should be, just like the sun, more subdued, as if seen through mist. Only there was no mist. Just the three of them and the horses appeared truly solid. But when he touched the stone under him, it felt solid enough. He reached out and shook Loyal and Huron. Wake up. Wake up and tell me I'm dreaming. Please wake up.
Is it morning already?
Loyal began, sitting up. Then his mouth fell open, and his big round eyes grew wider and wider. Huron woke with a start, then leaped to his feet, jumping like a flea in a hot rock to look this way, then that.
Where are we? What's happened? Where is everybody? Where are we, Lord Rand?
He sank to his knees, wringing his hands, but his eyes still darted.
What's happened?
I don't know, Rand said slowly. I was hoping it was a dream, but maybe it is a dream. He had had experience of dreams that were not dreams, experience he wanted neither to repeat nor to remember. He stood up carefully. Everything stayed as it was.
I do not think so, Loyal said.
He was studying the column, and he did not appear happy. His long eyebrows sagged across his cheeks, and his tufted ears seemed to have wilted.
I think this is the same stone we went to sleep beside last night. I think I know what it is now.
For once he sounded miserable about knowing.
No.
That being the same stone was no more crazy than what he could see around him. Matt and Perrin and the Shinarans gone, and everything changed.
I thought I'd escaped, but it started again. And there's no such thing as crazy anymore. Unless I am.
He looked at Loyal and Huron. They were not acting as if he were mad. They saw it too. Something about the steps caught his eye. The different colors. 7 rising from blue to red.
One for each Adja, he said.
No, Lord Rand,
Huron moaned.
No, Aes Sedai would not do this to us. They wouldn't. I walk in the light.
We all do, Huron,
Rand said. The Aes Sedai won't hurt you, unless you get in the way. Could this be Moraine's doing somehow? Loyal, you said you know what the stone is. What is it?
I said I think I know, Rand. There was a piece of an old book, just a few pages, but one of them had a drawing of this stone. This stone.
There was a distinct difference in the way he said it that marked importance.
Or one very like it. And underneath it, it said, "From stone to stone run the lines of if, between the worlds that might be."
What does that mean, Loyal? It doesn't make any sense. The Ogier shook his massive head sadly.
It was only a few pages. Part of it said Aes Sedai in the Age of Legends, some of those who could travel, the most powerful of them, could use these stones. It did not say how, but I think, from what I could puzzle out, that perhaps those Aes Sedai used the stones somehow to journey to those worlds.
He glanced up at the seared trees and pulled his eyes down again quickly, as he did not want to think about what lay beyond the rim.
Yet even if Aes Sedai can use them, or could, we have no Aes Sedai with us to channel the power. So I don't see how it can be.
Rand's skin prickled. Aes Sedai used them, in the Age of Legends, when there were male Aes Sedai. He had a vague memory of the void closing round him as he fell asleep, filled with that uneasy glow. And he remembered the room in the village, and the light he had reached for to escape. If that was the male half of True Source... No, it can't be. But what if it is? Light, I was wondering whether to run or not, and all the time it's right inside my head. Maybe I brought us here. He did not want to think about it. Worlds that might be... I don't understand, Loyal. The Ogier shrugged massively and uneasily.
Neither do I, Rand. Most of it sounded like this. If a woman go left or right, does time's flow divide? Does the wheel then weave two patterns? 1,000 for each of her turnings? As many as the stars? Is one real, the others merely shadows and reflections? You see, it is not very clear. Mainly questions, most of which seem to contradict each other. And there just wasn't much of it.
He went back to staring at the column, but he looked as if he wished it would go away.
There are supposed to be a good many of these stones scattered all over the world, or there were once, but I never heard of anyone finding one. I never heard of anyone finding anything like this at all.
My Lord Rand. Now on his feet, Hurin seemed calmer, but he clutched his coat at the waist with both hands, his face urgent. My Lord Rand, you'll get us back, won't you? Back where we belong? I've a wife, my lord, and children. Melia'd take it bad enough, me dying, but if she doesn't even have my body to give to the mother's embrace, she'll grieve to the end of her days. You understand, my lord, I can't leave her not knowing. You'll get us back. And if I die, if you can't take her my body, you'll let her know, so she has that at least. He was no longer questioning at the end. A note of confidence had crept into his voice. Rand opened his mouth to say again he was not a lord, then shut it without speaking. That was hardly important enough to mention now. You got him into this. He wanted to deny it, but he knew what he was, knew he could channel, even if it always seemed to happen all by itself. Loyal said Aes Sedai used the stones, and that meant the one power. What Loyal said he knew, you could be sure of. The Ogier never claimed to know if he did not. And there was no one else nearby who could wield the power. You got him into it. You have to get him out. You have to try. I will do my best, Hurin. And because Hurin was Shainaran, he added, by my house and honor. A shepherd's house and a shepherd's honor. But I'll make them do as well as a lord's. Hurin loosed his hold on his coat. The confidence reached his eyes, too. He bowed deeply.
Honor to serve, my lord.
Guilt rippled through Rand. He thinks you'll see him home now because Shainaran lords always keep their word. What are you going to do, Lord Rand? None of that, Huron. There'll be no bowing. I'm not...
Suddenly he knew he could not tell the man again that he was not a lord. All that was holding the sniffer together was his belief in a lord, and he could not take that away. Not now. Not here.
No bowing, he finished awkwardly. As you say, Lord Rand.
Huron's grin was almost as wide as when Rand first met him. Rand cleared his throat.
Yes, well, that's what I say.
They were both watching him, loyal curious, Huron confident, both waiting to see what he would do.
I brought them here. I must have. So I have to get them back. And that means...
Drawing a deep breath, he walked across the white paving stones to the symbol-covered cylinder. Small lines of some language he did not know surrounded each symbol. Odd letters that flowed in curves and spirals, suddenly turned to jagged hooks and angles, then flowed on. At least it was not Trolloc script. Reluctantly, he put his hands on the column. It looked like any dry, polished stone, but it felt curiously slick, like oiled metal. He closed his eyes and formed the flame. The void came slowly, hesitantly. He knew his own fear was holding it back, fear of what he was trying. As fast as he fed fear into the flame, more came.
I can't do it. Channel the power. I don't want to. Like, there has to be another way.
Grimly, he forced the thoughts to stillness. He could feel sweat beating on his face. Determinedly, he kept on, pushing his fears into the consuming flame, making it grow and grow. And the void was there. The core of him floated in emptiness. He could see the light.
Saidin.
Even with his eyes closed. Feel the warmth of it surrounding him, surrounding everything. Suffusing everything. It wavered like a candle flame seen through oiled paper. Rancid oil. Stinking oil. He reached for it. He was not sure how he reached, but it was something, a movement, a stretching toward the light, towards Aideen, and caught nothing as if running his hands through water. It felt like a slimy pond, scum floating atop clean water below. He could not scoop up any of the water. Time and again it trickled through his fingers, not even droplets of the water remaining, only the slick scum making his skin crawl. Desperately he tried to form an image of the hollow as it had been, with Ingtar and the lances sleeping by their horses, with Matt and Perrin, and the stone lying buried except for one end. Outside the void he formed it, clinging to the shell of emptiness that enclosed him. He tried to link the image with the light, tried to force them together. The hollow as it had been, and he and Loyal and Huron there together. His head hurt. Together with Matt and Perrin and the Shinarans. Burning in his head. Together. The void shattered into 1,000 razor shards, slicing his mind. Shuddering, he staggered back, wide-eyed. His hands hurt from pressing the stone, and his arms and shoulders quivered with aching. His stomach lurched from the feel of filth covering him, and his head... He tried to steady his breathing. That had never happened before. When the void went, it went like a pricked bubble, just gone, in a twinkling. Never like broken glass. His head felt numb, as if the 1,000 slashes had happened so quickly, the pain had not yet come. But every cut had felt as real as if done with a knife. He touched his temple and was surprised not to see blood on his fingers. Huron stood there watching him, still confident. If anything, the sniffer seemed more sure by the minute. Lord Rand was doing something. That was what lords were for. They protected the land and the people with their bodies and their lives, and when something was wrong, they set it aright and saw fairness and justice done. As long as Rand was doing something, anything, Huron would have confidence that it would all come out right in the end. That was what lords did. Loyal had a different look, a slightly puzzled frown, but his eyes were on Rand, too. Rand wondered what he was thinking.
It was worth a try, he told them.
The rancid oil feel inside his head,
light, it's inside me, I don't want it inside me,
was fading slowly, but he still thought he might vomit.
I will try again in a few minutes.
He hoped he sounded confident.
He had no idea how the stones worked, if what he was doing had any chance of success.
Maybe there are rules for working them. Maybe you have to do something special. Like maybe you can't use the same stone twice, or...
He cut off that line of thought. There was no good in thinking like that. He had to do it. Looking at Loyal and Huron, he thought he knew what Lan had meant about duty pressing down like a mountain.
My lord, I think...
Huron let his words trail off, looking abashed for a moment.
My lord, maybe if we find the Dark Friends, we can make one of them tell us how to get back.
I would ask a Dark Friend or the Dark One himself if I thought I'd get a true answer back, Rand said. But we are all there is, just us three.
Just me. I'm the one who has to do it.
We could follow their trail, my lord. If we catch them...
Rand stared at the sniffer.
You can still smell them?
I can, my lord.
Huron frowned.
It's faint, pale-like, like everything else here. But I can smell the trail. Right up there.
He pointed to the rim of the hollow.
I don't understand it, my lord, but...
Last night I could have sworn the trail went right on by the hollow, back where we were.
Well, it's in the same place now, only here, and fainter, like I said. Not old, not faint like that, but... I don't know, Lord Rand, except that it's there.
Rand considered. If Thane and the Dark Friends were here, wherever here was, they might know how to get back. They had to if they had reached here in the first place. And they had the horn and the dagger. Matt had to have that dagger. For that, if for nothing else, he had to find them. What finally decided him, he was ashamed to realize, was that he was afraid to try again. Afraid to try channeling the power. He was less afraid of confronting Dark Friends and Trollocs with only Huron and Loyal than he was of that.
Then we will go after the Dark Friends.
He tried to sound sure, the way Lan would, or Ingtar.
The horn must be recovered. If we can't puzzle out a way to take it from them, at least we will know where they are when we find Ingtar again.
If only they don't ask how we're going to find him again.
Huron, make sure it really is the trail we're after.
The sniffer leaped into his saddle, eager to be doing something himself, perhaps eager to be away from the hollow, and scrambled his horse up the broad colored steps. The animal's hooves rang loudly on the stone, but they made not a mark. Rand stowed Red's hobbles in his saddlebags. The banner was still there. He would not have minded if that had been left behind. Then gathered his bow and quiver and climbed to the stallion's back. The bundle of Tom Maryland's cloak made a mound behind his saddle. Loyal led his big mount over to him. With the Ogier standing on the ground, Loyal's head came almost to Rand's shoulder, and him in his saddle. Loyal still looked puzzled.
You think we should stay here? Rand said. Try again to use the stone. If the Dark Friends are here in place, we have to find them. We can't leave the Horn of Valir in Dark Friend hands. You heard the Ammerlin, and we have to get that dagger back. Matt will die without it.
Loyal nodded.
Yes, Rand, we do. But Rand, the stones...
We will find another.
You said they were scattered all over, and if they're all like this, all this stonework around them, it should not be too hard to find one.
Rand, that fragment said the stones came from an older age than the Age of Legends, and even the Aes Sedai then did not understand them, though they used them. Some of the truly powerful did. They used them with the one power, Rand. How do you think to use this stone to take us back? Or any other stone we find?
For a moment, Rand could only stare at the Ogier, thinking faster than he ever had in his life.
If they are older than the Age of Legends, maybe the people who built them didn't use the power. There must be another way. The Dark Friends got here, and they certainly couldn't use the power. Whatever this other way is, I will find it out. I will get us back, Loyal.
He looked at the tall stone column with its odd markings and felt a prickle of fear.
Light, if only I don't have to use the power to do it. I will, Loyal, I promise, one way or another.
The Ogier gave a doubtful nod. He swung up onto his huge horse and followed Rand up the steps to join Huron among the blackened trees. The land stretched out, low and rolling, sparsely forested here and there with grassland between, crossed by more than one stream. In the middle distance, Rand thought he could see another burned patch. It was all pale, the colors washed. There was no sign of anything made by men except the stone circle behind them. The sky was empty, no chimney smoke, no birds, only a few clouds and the pale yellow sun. Worst of all, though, the land seemed to twist the eye. What was close at hand looked all right, and what was seen straight ahead in the distance. But whenever Rand turned his head, things that appeared distant when seen from the corner of his eye seemed to rush toward him, to be nearer when he stared straight at them. It made for dizziness. Even the horses whickered nervously and rolled their eyes. He tried moving his head slowly. The apparent movement of things that should have been fixed was still there, but it seemed to help a little. "Did your piece of a book say anything about this?" Rand asked. Loyal shook his head, then swallowed hard as if he wished he had kept it still.
"Nothing."
"I suppose there's nothing to do for it. Which way, Huron?"
"South, Lord Rand."
The sniffer kept his eyes on the ground.
"South, then.
There has to be a way back besides using the power." Rand healed Red's flanks. He tried to make his voice lighthearted, as if he saw no difficulty at all in what they were about.
"What was it Ingtar said? 3 or 4 days to that monument, Arthur Hawkwing? I wonder if that exists here, too. The way the stones do. If this is a world that could be, maybe it's still standing. Wouldn't that be something to see, Loyal?"
They rode south.
Chapter 14. Wolf Brother.
"Gone," Ingtar demanded of the air. "And my guards saw nothing. Nothing. They cannot just be gone."
Listening, Perrin hunched his shoulders and looked at Matt, who stood a little way off, frowning and muttering to himself. Arguing with himself was how Perrin saw it. The sun was peeking over the horizon, past time for them to have been riding. Shadows lay long across the hollow, stretched out and thinned, but still like the trees that made them. The pack horses, loaded and on their lead line, stamped impatiently, but everyone stood by his mount and waited. Uno came striding up.
"Not a goat-kissing track, my lord,"
he sounded offended. Failure touched on his skill.
"Burn me, not so much as a flaming hoof scrape. They just bloody vanished."
"Three men and 3 horses do not just vanish," Ingtar growled. "Go over the ground again, Uno. If anyone can find where they went, it's you."
"Maybe they just ran away," Matt said.
Uno stopped and glared at him. Like he'd cursed an Aes Sedai, Perrin thought wonderingly.
"Why would they run away?"
Ingtar's voice was dangerously soft.
"Rand? The builder? My sniffer? My sniffer! Why would any of them run, much less all 3?
Matt shrugged.
"I don't know. Rand was..."
Perrin wanted to throw something at him, hit him, anything to stop him, but Ingtar and Uno were watching. He felt a flood of relief when Matt hesitated, then spread his hands and muttered,
"I don't know why. I just thought maybe they had."
Ingtar grimaced.
"Ran away,"
he growled as if he did not believe it for an instant.
"The builder can go as he will, but Huron would not run away. And neither would Randall Thor. He would not. He knows his duty now. Go on, Uno. Search the ground again."
Uno gave a half bow and hurried away, sword hilt bobbing over his shoulder. Ingtar grumbled.
"Why would Huron leave like that, in the middle of the night without a word? He knows what we're about. How am I to track this shadow-spawned filth without him? I would give 1,000 gold crowns for a pack of trail hounds. If I did not know better, I would say the Dark Friends manage this so they can slip east or west without me knowing. Peace, I don't know if I do know better."
He stumped off after Uno. Perrin shifted uneasily. The Dark Friends were doubtless getting further away with every minute. Getting further away, and with them the Horn of Valir, and the dagger from Shadar Logoth. He did not think that Rand, whatever he had become, whatever had happened to him, would abandon that chase.
But where did he go? And why?
Loyal might go with Rand for friendship, but why Huron? Maybe he did run away, he muttered, then looked around. No one appeared to have heard. Even Matt was not paying him any mind. He scrubbed a hand through his hair. If Aes Sedai had been after him to be a false dragon, he would have run too. But worrying about Rand was doing nothing to help track the Dark Friends. There was a way, perhaps, if he was willing to take it. He did not want to take it. He had been running away from it. But perhaps now he could no longer run. Serves me right for what I told Rand. I wish I could run. Even knowing what he could do to help, what he had to do, he hesitated. No one was looking at him. No one would know what they were seeing, even if they did look. Finally, reluctantly, he closed his eyes and let himself drift. Let his thoughts drift out, away from him. He had tried denying it from the first, long before his eyes began to change from dark brown to burnished golden yellow. At that first meeting, that first instant of recognition, he had refused to believe. And he had run from the recognition ever since. He still wanted to run. His thoughts drifted, feeling for what must be out there, what was always out there in country where men were few and far between, feeling for his brothers. He did not like to think of them that way, but they were. In the beginning, he had been afraid that what he did had some taint of the Dark One, or of the One Power, equally bad for a man who wanted nothing more than to be a blacksmith and live his life in the light and in peace. From that time, he knew something of how Rand felt, afraid of himself, feeling unclean. He was still not past that entirely. This thing he did was older than humans using the One Power, though, something from the birth of time. Not the power, Moraine had told him. Something long vanished, now come again. Egwene knew, too, though he wished she did not. He wished no one did. He hoped she had not told anyone. Contact. He felt them. Felt other minds. Felt his brothers, the wolves. Their thoughts came to him as a whirlpool blend of images and emotions. At first he had not been able to make out anything except the raw emotion, but now his mind put words to them. Wolf brother. Surprise. Two legs that talks. A faded image, dim with time, old beyond old, of men running with wolves, two packs hunting together. We have heard this comes again. You are Longtooth? It was a faint picture of a man dressed in clothes made of hides, with a long knife in his hand, but overlaid on the image, more central, was a shaggy wolf with one tooth longer than the rest. A steel tooth gleaming in the sunlight, as the wolf led the pack in a desperate charge through deep snow toward the deer that would mean life instead of slow death by starvation, and the deer thrashing to run in powder to their bellies, and the sun glinting on the white until it hurt the eyes, and the wind howling down the passes, swirling the fine snow like mist, and wolves' names were always complex images. Perrin recognized the man, Elias Machira, who had first introduced him to wolves. Sometimes he wished he had never met Elias. No, he thought, and tried to picture himself in his mind. Yes, we have heard of you. It was not the image he had made, a young man with heavy shoulders and shaggy brown curls, a young man with an axe at his belt, who others thought moved and thought slowly. That man was there, somewhere in the mind picture that came from the wolves, but stronger by far was a massive wild bull with curved horns of shining metal, running through the night with the speed and exuberance of youth, curly-haired coat gleaming in the moonlight, flinging himself in among white cloaks on their horses, with the air crisp and cold and dark, and blood so red on the horns, and young bull. For a moment, Perrin lost the contact in his shock. He had not dreamed they had given him a name. He wished he could not remember how he had earned it. He touched the axe at his belt with its gleaming half-moon blade. Light help me, I killed two men. They would have killed me even quicker, and Egwene, but pushing all that aside, it was done and behind him, he had no wish to remember any of it. He gave the wolves the smell of Rand, of Loyal and Huron, and asked if they had scented the three. It was one of the things that had come to him with the change in his eyes. He could identify people by their smell, even when he could not see them. He could see more sharply, too, see in anything but pitch darkness. He was always careful to light lamps or candles now, sometimes before anyone else thought they were needed. From the wolves came a view of men on horses approaching the hollow in late day. That was the last they had seen or smelled of Rand or the other two. Perrin hesitated. The next step would be useless unless he told Ingtar. And Matt will die if we don't find that dagger.
Burn you, Rand, why did you take the sniffer?
The one time he had gone to the dungeon with Egwene, the smell of Fane had made his hair stand on end. Not even Trolloc's smelled so foul. He had wanted to rip through the bars of the cell and tear the man apart, and finding that inside himself had frightened him more than Fane did. To mask Fane's smell in his own mind, he added the scent of Trolloc's before he howled aloud. From the distance came the cries of a wolf pack, and in the hollow, horses stamped and whickered fearfully. Some of the soldiers fingered their long-bladed lances and eyed the rim of the hollow uneasily. Inside Perrin's head, it was much worse. He felt the rage of the wolves, the hate. There were only two things wolves hated. All else they merely endured. But fire and Trollocs they hated, and they would go through fire to kill Trollocs. Even more than the Trollocs, Fane's scent had put them into a frenzy, as if they smelled something that made Trollocs seem natural and right.
Where?
The sky rolled in his head. The land spun. East and west, wolves did not know. They knew the movements of sun and moon, the shift of seasons, the contours of the land. Perrin puzzled it out. South. And something more. An eagerness to kill the Trollocs. The wolves would let Young Bull share in the killing. He could bring the two legs with their hard skins if he wanted. But Young Bull and Smoke and Two Deer and Winter Dawn and all the rest of the pack would hunt down the twisted ones who had dared come into their land. The inedible flesh and bitter blood would burn the tongue, but they must be killed. Kill them. Kill the twisted ones. Their fury infected him. His lips peeled back in a snarl, and he took a step to join them, run with them in the hunt, in the killing. With an effort, he broke the contact, except for a thin sense that the wolves were there. He could have pointed to them across the intervening distance. He felt cold inside.
I'm a man, not a wolf. Light help me, I am a man.
Are you well, Perrin?
Matt said, moving closer. He sounded the way he always did, flippant, and bitter under it, too, of late. But he looked worried.
That is all I need. Rand run off, and then you get sick. I don't know where I'll find a wisdom to look after you out here. I think I have some willow bark in my saddlebags. I can make you some willow bark tea, if Ingtar lets us stay that long. Serve you right if I make it too strong.
I'm all right, Matt.
Shaking off his friend, he went to find Ingtar. The Shinaran lord was scanning the ground on the rim with Uno and Ragan and Massima. The others frowned at him as he drew Ingtar aside. He made sure Uno and the rest were too far away to hear before he spoke.
I don't know where Rand or the others went, Ingtar, but Padan Thane and the Trollocs, and I guess the rest of the Dark Friends, are still heading south.
How do you know this? Ingtar said.
Perrin drew a deep breath.
Wolves told me.
He waited, for what he was not sure. Laughter, scorn, an accusation of being a Dark Friend, of being mad. Deliberately, he tucked his thumbs behind his belt, away from the axe.
I will not kill. Not again. If he tries to kill me for a Dark Friend, I'll run. But I won't kill anybody else.
I have heard of things like this, Ingtar said slowly, after a moment. Rumors. There was a warder, a man called Elias Machira, who some said could talk to wolves. He disappeared years ago. He seemed to catch something in Perrin's eyes.
You know him?
I know him, Perrin said flatly. He's the one. I don't want to talk about it. I didn't ask for it.
That's what Rand said. Light. I wish I were home working Master Luhan's forge.
These wolves, Ingtar said. They will track the Dark Friends and Trollocs for us?
Perrin nodded.
Good. I will have the horn, whatever it takes.
The Shinaran glanced around at Uno and the others, still searching for tracks.
Better not to tell anyone else, though. Wolves are considered good luck in the Borderlands. Trollocs fear them. But still, better to keep this between us for the time. Some of them might not understand.
I would as soon nobody else ever found out, Perrin said.
I will tell them you think you have Huron's talent. They know about that. They're easy with it. Some of them saw you wrinkling your nose back in that village and at the ferry. I've heard jokes about your delicate nose. Yes. You keep us on the trail today. Uno will see enough of their tracks to confirm it is the trail. And before nightfall, every last man will be sure you are a sniffer. I will have the horn.
He glanced at the sky and raised his voice.
Daylight is wasting. To horse!
To Perrin's surprise, the Shinaran seemed to accept Ingtar's story. A few of them looked skeptical. Massima went so far as to spit. But Uno nodded thoughtfully, and that was enough for most. Matt was the hardest to convince.
A sniffer? You? You're going to track murderers by smell? Perrin, you're as crazy as Rand. I am the only sane one left from Emmonsfield, with Egwene and Nynaeve trotting off to Tarvalen to become...
He cut himself short with an uneasy glance for the Shinarans. Perrin took Huron's place beside Ingtar as the small column rode south. Matt kept up a string of disparaging remarks until Uno found the first tracks left by Trollocs and by men on horses. But Perrin paid him little mind. It was all he could do to keep the wolves from dashing on ahead to kill the Trollocs. The wolves cared only about killing the Twisted Ones. To them, Dark Friends were no different from any other two legs. Perrin could almost see the Dark Friends scattering in a dozen directions, while the wolves slew Trollocs, running away with the Horn of Valir, running away with the dagger. And once the Trollocs were dead, he did not think he could interest the wolves in tracking the humans, even if he had any idea which of them to track. He had a running argument with them, and sweat covered his forehead long before he got the first flash of images that turned his stomach. He drew rein, stopping his horse dead. The others did the same, looking at him, waiting. He stared straight ahead and cursed softly, bitterly. Wolves would kill men, but men were not a preferred prey. Wolves remembered the old hunting together for one thing, and the two legs tasted bad for another. Wolves were more particular about their food than he would have believed. They would not eat carrion unless they were starving, and few would kill more than they could eat. What Perrin felt from the wolves could best be described as disgust. And there were the images. He could see them much more clearly than he wished. Bodies, men and women and children, heaped and tumbled about. Blood-soaked earth, churned by hooves and frenzied attempts to escape. Torn flesh, heads severed. Vultures flapping, their white wings stained red. Bloody, featherless heads tearing and gorging. He broke loose before his stomach emptied itself. Above some trees in the far distance, he could just make out black specks whirling low, dropping, then rising again. Vultures fighting over their meal. There's something bad up there. He swallowed, meeting Ingtar's gaze. How could he fit telling them into the story of being a sniffer? I don't want to get close enough to look at that. But they'll want to investigate once they can see the vultures. I have to tell them enough so they'll circle around. The people from that village. I think the Trollocs killed them. Uno began cursing quietly, and some of the other Shinarans muttered to themselves. None of them seemed to take his announcement as odd, though. Lord Ingtar said he was a sniffer, and sniffers could smell killing.
And there is someone following us, Ingtar said.
Matt turned his horse eagerly.
Maybe it's Rand. I knew he wouldn't run out on me.
Thin, scattered puffs of dust rose to the north. A horse was running across patches where the grass grew thin. The Shinarans spread out, lances ready, watching in all directions. It was no place to be casual about a stranger. A speck appeared, a horse and rider. A woman, to Perrin's eyes, long before anyone else could discern the rider,
and quickly drew closer. She slowed to a trot as she came up on them, fanning herself with one hand. A plump, graying woman, with her cloak tied behind her saddle, who blinked at them all vaguely.
"That's one of the Aes Sedai," Matt said disappointedly. "I recognize her. Varen."
"Varen Sedai," Ingtar said sharply, then bowed to her from his saddle.
"Moraine Sedai sent me, Lord Ingtar,"
Varen announced with a satisfied smile.
"She thought you might need me. Such a gallop I've had. I thought I might not catch you short of Kyrian. You saw that village, of course. Oh, that was very nasty, wasn't it? And that Murdrol. There were ravens and crows all over the rooftops, but never a one went near it, dead as it was. I had to wave away the Dark One's own weight in flies, though, but I could make out what it was. A shame I did not have time to take it down. I've never had a chance to study."
Suddenly her eyes narrowed, and the absent manner vanished like smoke.
"Where is Randall Thor?"
Ingtar grimaced.
"Gone, Varen Sedai. Vanished last night, without a trace. Him, the Ogier, and Hurin, one of my men."
"The Ogier, Lord Ingtar. And your sniffer went with him? What would those two have in common with—"
Ingtar gaped at her, and she snorted.
"Did you think you could keep something like that secret?"
She snorted again.
"Sniffers. Vanished, you say?"
"Yes, Varen Sedai."
Ingtar sounded unsettled. It was never easy discovering Aes Sedai knew the secrets you were trying to keep from them. Perrin hoped Moraine had not told anyone about him.
"But I have. I have a new sniffer."
The Shinaran lord gestured to Perrin.
"This man seems to have the ability also. I will find the Horn of Valir, as I swore to. Have no fear. Your company will be welcome, Aes Sedai, if you wish to ride with us."
To Perrin's surprise, he did not sound as if he entirely meant it. Varen glanced at Perrin, and he shifted uneasily.
"A new sniffer? Just when you lose your old one? How providential. You found no tracks? No, of course not. You said no trace. Odd. Last night."
She twisted in her saddle, looking back north, and for a moment Perrin almost thought she was going to ride back the way she had come. Ingtar frowned at her.
"You think their disappearance has something to do with the horn, Aes Sedai?"
Varen settled back.
"The horn? No. No, I think not. But it is odd. Very odd. I do not like odd things until I can understand them."
"I can have two men escort you back to where they disappeared, Varen Sedai. They will have no trouble taking you right to it."
"No, if you say they vanished without a trace."
For a long moment she studied Ingtar, her face unreadable.
"I will ride with you. Perhaps we will find them again, or they will find us. Talk to me as we ride, Lord Ingtar. Tell me everything you can about the young man. Everything he did, everything he said."
They started off in a jingle of harness and armor, Varen riding close beside Ingtar and questioning him closely, but too low to be overheard. She gave Perrin a look when he tried to maintain his place, and he fell back.
"It's Rand she's after," Matt murmured, "not the horn."
Perrin nodded.
"Wherever you've gotten to, Rand, stay there. It's safer than here."